third paper will be given to us by Leora Auslander. Leora Auslander is the Arthur and Joanne Rasmussen Professor in Western Civilization at the University of Chicago, where she was the founding director of the Center for Gender Studies and is a member of the Center for Jewish Studies. She got involved in thinking about food through her interest in everyday religious practices in the modern state. She has published a couple of articles particularly relevant to her talk today. The first is Negotiating Embodied Difference, Veils, Minarets, Kippahs, and Sukkot in Contemporary Europe, which was published in Archiv für Sozialgeschichte in 2011, and Bavarian Crucifixes and French Headscarves, Religious Practices and the Postmodern European State, which was published in Cultural Dynamics in 2000. Her talk today is entitled, Why Vegetarian Food in School Cafeterias is a Problem, Food and Frenchness in the 21st Century.
I'm very pleased to be here and on this panel, and particularly listening to Ben's paper, I realize I need to modify some of the things. So that's great. It'll be fun to talk about. I also actually have to change my title slightly. I realized as I was writing it, the minute title is Why French Food Is and Isn't a Problem. So I will explain why. So the controversies over religious science in French schools, other public institutions, and in certain instances, the street are well known. Debates about providing accommodation, school cafeterias, for religiously based elementary restrictions have received far less publicity and particularly less scholarly attention in both France and the United States. This is unfortunate because the school lunch question has generated far more disagreement, actually, than either the wearing of headscarves in schools or the refusal to attend certain classes. The school lunch question, therefore, provides a different window, I would argue, into how two different elements of culture, food and clothing, are conceptualized, and how they are understood to serve or hinder laïcité and national solidarity. In my paper today, I'll start by summarizing the issues on the ground and the historical context before moving on to my take on productive approaches to this broad topic. So the issue. In the last two decades, an increasing percentage of students attending French public schools have been refusing the meals offered them in the school cafeteria. The most common grounds of abstention have been that the food violates their religious practice, but some are also saying that they cannot eat the food because they are following a vegetarian or vegan diet for ethical, environmental, or political reasons. This has, in the context of broader debate about laïcité, integration, and national identity, national solidarity, met with many responses from politicians, activist groups, local administrators responsible for food provision, parents, and the children themselves. The problem has been widely reported in the press, and a number of cases have been brought before the French and European courts. The issue is not new, nor is it limited to France. Both France's history and national context have structured the debate, however. Jewish memoir writers, for example, have left anecdotal evidence that as early as the 1920s, some public schools in neighborhoods with large populations of observant Jews quietly stopped serving pork. And in the 1960s, in the midst of the arrival of substantial numbers of students from North Africa, schools in Lyon and elsewhere accommodated the arrival of practicing Muslim and Jewish students by removing the pork from the food they provided them. By 1980, many school districts across France were emulating that practice. I would argue, then, that, as was the case with the religiously mandated address, a quiet compromise characterized this issue until the late 1980s or 1990s. I don't want to make that seem like a golden age, by the by. So that's there's a kind of caution in that. Observant Muslims and Jews who attended public or Catholic school and chose to eat lunch in the school cafeteria practiced a modified version of Muslim and Jewish elementary practice. They were, in fact, eating food that merely had the most ostentatious signs of its non-halal or non-kosher quality removed, the pieces of pork. But it was not in any conventional sense halal or kosher food. There's great debate among Muslims and Jews about what constitutes halal or kosher food, but very few would say that a dish composed of vegetables cooked with pork was halal or kosher. The school districts also compromised. Rather than applying the strict norms of laïcité, the non-accommodation of religion in school, they adapted to Muslim and Jewish food practice. As I'll soon detail, the current situation is a product of changing positions on both sides. Lunch provision in metropolitan French primary and secondary schools for day students dates from the 19th century, but was very unevenly distributed across the country. Access to school-provided food has never been a right. The district or the school decides who can eat and who cannot. It's not been free and has not been obligatory. The lunch period is not considered part of the school day, and schools are not required to serve lunch. When schools have offered a food service, it's one option among many available, or several available to students. If they don't purchase lunch at school, students can bring their lunch, although then they generally cannot eat those lunches in the school cafeteria, which is an important feature. They can go home, or they, if they're old enough, can leave the school premises to go buy lunch. Food provision, in other words, has never been understood to be a fundamental responsibility of the school system, but rather an auxiliary service offered by it. It is, nonetheless, regulated by the state. Law is nearly a century apart, the first dating from October 1886 and the second from July 1983, gave control of primary school food services to the commune, while that of middle and high school schools was run by the national state, but responsibility for them devolved to the regions as part of the decentralization project of the 1980s. This local control has allowed for and created enormous disparity across France in how school districts have provided. Despite the distanciation of food service from the centralized state and its non-obligatory nature, policy and practice have been systematically marked by a conviction that both meal times and the meals themselves and the food served play an important role in the French public school system's commitment to not only educating the schools, the nation's children, but inculcating Frenchness in them. Since the Third Republic, an essential element for many policymakers and school personnel has, of course, been laïcité. School cafeterias are viewed as an important instrument of not only the negative project of religious neutrality in the public arena, but of the positive project of religious of building a civic republican morality. In Kay Chadwick's pithy phrasing, quote, the patrie was allocated the role played by God in the confessional Catholic state, end quote. The ultimate litmus test for school policy has often been whether or not it effectively integrates the young into the patrie. That patrie in the singular has had a complex relation to both the petite patrie in the plural within the hexagon and to the French Empire. Within the metropole, the French state has famously emphasized uniformity built on the suppression of regional languages, a centralized and centralizing organization of military service and secondary and higher education, and an expansive national civil service. Two generations of scholarship has, however, definitively demonstrated that both French children were prepared for that grande patrie by intimate knowledge of and attachment to their petite patrie, or locality, and that certain material embodied forms of local difference have long been understood to reinforce and not undermine national solidarity. The valorization of regional cuisines is one important example of a belief that local difference can help build and consolidate national unity. With the development of tourism and the elaboration of restaurant culture and French gastronomy on the one hand, and ethnographic research on the other, came the codification of French foodways in guidebooks, cookbooks, and scientific monographs. The diversity of ingredients and styles of preparation were understood to be the product and reflection of France's highly variegated natural terrain. The celebration of these differences was facilitated by the fact that although regional elementary practices varied, there are no formal interdictions, taboos, or differing definitions of pure or impure food among them. Furthermore, French foodways were unified by a shared conception of the elementary order of the day and of each meal. There is agreement that nourishment should be provided by three daily meals, and that major meals should be organized into courses with an appetizer, main dish, cheese, and dessert. Reliable recent surveys have demonstrated the persistence into the present of these norms of food consumption at meals, rather than on the run, of multiple courses and of conviviality, notwithstanding the widespread availability of food. The elaboration, as we've been hearing about, of this French food system was simultaneous with the expansion of the imperial nation state. And here, the relationship with Ben's paper is interesting. I think I would have to modify my argument here, but I'll give it as I read it. During the sojourns in their north and west Africa, Southeast Asia, the Caribbean, and Polynesia, French military, civil servants, missionaries, and settlers encountered myriad foodways. Reactions to those experiences were far from homogeneous, but here a simplified sketch will have to suffice. As in other domains of imperial rule, efforts were made both to discourage French colonialists from going native and to assimilate a fraction of that population into French civilization via transformation of their eating habits. Food, like clothing and language, were to be used to differentiate the évoluer from the vast majority. Eugen Weber's already much challenged analogy between the provinces and the colonies, therefore, proves false here as well. Provincial and regional foodways are understood to be constitutive of Frenchness. The cuisines of peoples colonized by the French state, generally, were not. This boundary drawing has continued into the post-colonial moments. So the question of the place of couscous, tagine, feu, and acra is a complex thing. They are clearly happily consumed in restaurants across France. They sometimes make their way into people's homes, but they are understood to be explorations in exoticism, differentiated from the consumption of cassoulet, poulet normand, galettes, or choucroute. These alimentary traces of colonialism, unlike regional dishes, also only very, very exceptionally find their place in school cafeterias. I would argue then that the school lunch program both reflects and reinforces the centrality of French foodways to national belonging and the established definitions of acceptable diversity. With an explicit mandate to educate children's tastes, schools have offered and continue to offer menus featuring a range of food, including those specific to the school's region. Children from the age of 3, when many enter the school system, are taught to expect an appetizer, main dish, dairy product, and a dessert to be eaten in that order off of one's own plate, sitting at a table. They are not offered the possibility of eating food that finds its origin in Vietnam, Algeria, Senegal, or New Caledonia, any more than it is seen as acceptable to put all the food on the table at once or divide the service into many more small elements, as is done in some of those food cultures. It is in the context of this particular kind of nation building that the challenge of religiously mandated food restrictions appeared. So in terms of the recent controversy, let me quickly summarize the 5 positions that are out there. So just to reiterate, very substantial in some school districts up to half of the students have been abstaining from eating cafeteria food, and therefore in most instances cannot share that time and space with their schoolmates because they cannot obtain food that conforms to their elementary norms. For the mass majority, this is a question of adhering to Muslim law, but there are also Jews, Buddhists, and Hindus, as well as children who do not eat meat on environmental, ethical, or political grounds. While a few have asked that the schools provide halal, or more rarely kosher, food, the majority see a vegetarian option as the best solution. So that's the state of things in a nutshell. So the range of responses. Municipal councillors and mayors, who are the ultimate arbiters of this locally controlled matter, have responded in 5 ways, revealing considerable disagreements concerning the definition of laïcité. First of all, some school districts have consistently refused to make any accommodation. Their position is that those who choose to eat in the school cafeteria must eat the food offered. Those who choose not to eat that food should bring a bag lunch or eat at home. Some, like Nicolas Sarkozy, go further and say that those children should attend parochial schools. This is a minority position, but one that's been reinforced substantially recently when several mayors this autumn and last summer reversed their school's previous policy of offering a substitute meal. The UMP mayor, Chalon-sur-Saône, for example, explicitly said that there is a way of eating that is, quote, French and Republican, unquote, and children in his town will eat that way. Secondly, some have retained the earlier compromise of either serving the non-pork eating children the vegetables and starch that was cooked with the pork, or serving them the same side dishes, in some cases cooked without the meat and others with it, but substituting another meat for the pork. This does not resolve the problem for those who do not simply abstain from pork, but either eat halal or kosher meat or are vegetarians. Third strategy that some have used, some municipalities, some have agreed that offering a vegetarian option is the best resolution. For example, in Nyon, 2007, the associate mayor responsible for education, Yves Fournel, decided that this was a solution that allowed for difference without providing explicitly religiously marked food. This was contested in court by a feminist group. Those opposed held that allowing students to not conform to French eating practices would, by its acceptance of the enactment of religiously motivated difference in the public sphere, erode the fundamental principle of French society and thereby solidarity. The school district won in court, and this strategy has been adopted by a number of other cities, including this past summer by Toulouse and Pau. François Bayrou defended his decision as a mayor of Pau, saying, quote, "A vegetarian meal does not have a religious connotation, and it does not bring people into opposition, but rather brings them together," end quote. Fourthly, very recently, Yves Yego, the UDI mayor of Montreux-Foyonne and deputy to the National Assembly, has proposed a law that would require a vegetarian option in all French school cafeterias, so a level of state national state intervention that's exceptional. Quote, "By giving each child a free choice, we can sidestep religious conflict and in addition encourage a mode of nourishment that is more and more recommended," end quote. He launched an online petition to gather support for this proposal that has gathered 130,000 signatures. This proposal builds on an editorial in Le Monde last spring, which was signed by several seven public figures, in which they argued, quote, "A vegetarian main dish, and even more emphatically a vegan one, is a solution to satisfying the elementary preferences of all that is both laïque and ecumenical," end quote. Finally, and very unusually, a high school principal in the town of Roubaix decided to shift to a halal meal for all. This would accommodate religious Muslims and Christians, as well as secular students. It's not, however, a solution for the Jewish or vegetarian students, and it's obviously also a problematic solution in terms of the norms of laïcité, since it is explicitly religious, adhering to a religious man. These positions reflect the continued uncertainty and disagreements concerning both the definition of laïcité and the room for particular kinds of difference in France. Laïcité, however defined, is supposed to cohabit with freedom of religious belief and practice. A cohabitation has been the source of continuous conflict since the 1880s, and more emphatically since 1905. The 1959 Loi de Bray that reestablished the state funding of private schools reflects the enduring quality of this controversy. The Loi de Bray provides very substantial state support for approved parochial and secular private schools. To qualify, the schools must first meet their curricular norms set by the state. They must admit students of all religions and be in compliance with certain other norms. The existence of these schools, the legality of homeschooling, and the fact that students are not required to eat lunch in the school cafeteria means that when there's conflict over the school lunch offerings, a possible answer is always to tell the students simply not to partake. Legal challenges to the refusal to offer food edible to those who do not eat standard meat have almost all failed on these grounds. In the words of a reporter for the progressive Catholic newspaper La Croix, quote, "The principle of a single main dish seems juridically solid, but remains politically very sensitive," end quote. Grasping the logic of the two extreme responses to this politically sensitive issue is not difficult. The militants for exclusively French food in school cafeterias will also oppose the public presence of non-religious, non-Christian religions and of foreigners are consistent and predictable. Those who are in favor of making room for visible diversity in France, including of language, clothing, and religious practice, are also quite predictable. Much more difficult to explain, interesting intellectually, are the very numerous policymakers and parents who are in favor of the ban on religious signs in schools, but in favor of allowing choice in the cafeteria. So, what do we do with them? I'd like to suggest the seemingly contradictory position is the result of the specific place of food and foodways in France. Taste in food is understood to be a particular kind of taste, different from taste in clothing. French adults are generally conscious of having been taught how to eat, what is good to eat and what is not, what is pure, what's impure, as well as how it should be eaten. Once learned, however, that education produces visceral responses. Those who think that elementary difference should be accommodated hold that position because they believe that the children and their parents are not making a choice of the same kind as the choice to wear a headscarf or to ask their daughters to wear a headscarf. Even thoroughly laïc people who have no tolerance of religious practice can empathize, even identify, with people finding certain classes of food that they think are delicious, inedible. They can, in other words, assimilate food taboos into a secular worldview. They find the same thing impossible for the headscarf or other matters of dress. They think that headscarf wearers refuse to remove them, not because they are part of religious practice intrinsic to their religiosity, but because they are more comfortable wearing them or using them as a communicative sign or are using them to contest the norms. There is no analogy in a secular worldview for Laïc people accepting the headscarf, unlike a vegetarian option in the school cafe. I'm sorry. There's no analogy in a secular world. For Laïc French people, accepting the headscarf, unlike a vegetarian option in the school cafeteria, requires accepting the reality of fundamental difference in the French public sphere. Thank you.